Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined on this week's episode by... I mean, you're probably like the all-time favorite. If we did like an all-time draft of ROE guests, you know, with the number one overall pick, I'm taking Vivek Jacob, man. How you doing?
Oh, snap. That's big. That's big.
Yo, Alex, I hope you're listening / watching to this right now.
Alex is on tilt. You heard that? He's on tilt the rest of the year, man.
Yeah.
But he gets the running back love, though, right?
Yeah, that's separate. That's separate.
He can get the running back love. You can take your listener calls with Josh and Katie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we show everyone some love that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yo, real talk, man. I mean, you know, Alex knows a couple times you have fallen through or been unavailable as a guest, and I've gone to Alex, so he knows the hierarchy, man. You're the number one option. All right. So the theme of this week's episode is, you know, one of the things that really stood out to me from last year's playoff run, the title team, was that, you know, the Raptors didn't have a single lottery pick on the roster. I think Kawhi was picked 15th, so that's technically not a lottery pick. And, you know, it's a case of just, like, excellent both drafting from the Raptors' perspective in terms of the guys that they drafted and developed, like Pascal. Like, you know, Fred didn't go drafted, but obviously they brought him in like a rookie and developed and everything like that. Norm. Coupled with the shrewd acquisition of other players who, to be honest, if you looked at the team last year that won the title, they kind of had a collective sort of chip on their shoulders. A lot of them had been counted out. And when you look at sort of where they went in the draft, again, not a single lottery pick on the roster that won the NBA championship. So I wanted to go back this week to look at the players on this year's Raptors, the 2019-20 Raptors, and look at where each player would go in their respective redraft for their draft class. So we can start right here. We're going to start with the earliest draft class and move to the, obviously, the newest one being Terrence Davis. But back in 2006, Kyle Lowry goes 24th overall to the Memphis Grizzlies. First off, I'm just going to put it on the table, man. I'm putting Kyle Lowry first overall in a 2006 NBA draft redraft. It's maybe a controversial decision because LaMarcus Aldridge leads this draft class in things like win shares, in things like points, rebounds, stuff like that. But to me, the difference for me is Kyle Lowry has a championship, LaMarcus does not. And as much as I respect LaMarcus Aldridge's career, I think Kyle Lowry has affected more winning. So where are you taking Kyle Lowry in a 2006 NBA draft redraft?
Yeah, I think the most interesting debate here is the Aldridge-Lowry one, and mm-hmm. I think I find it interesting thinking back to that series between the Spurs and the Warriors where Kawhi gets hurt,
yeah.
And you think that if, for me, I'm one of those guys that I truly believe that that Spurs team was designed to beat those Warriors,
mm-hmm.
and I thought they were proving it in that game one. I don't think that was just some fluke that Kawhi went off in the first half. And they just knew how to play them. So,
wait, hold on. Are you saying the Warriors were lucky, quote unquote, to win the 2017 NBA championship? Let's just put that on the record, all right? Because people have been saying shit about the Raptors all the time.
And so, all of a sudden, say the Spurs go on to win that title. Now, LaMarcus Aldridge is the second best player on a championship team, and his narrative completely changes, right? And so, I think it's incredible how much, you know, playoffs can change legacies. So at the end of the day, we have to go with what happened. And so the facts are that Kyle Lowry is an NBA champion and LaMarcus Aldridge is not. So if you're ranking the best, I think at this point you would probably say Lowry is the one that you would go with. I took a little bit of a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I went back, and my view in terms of redrafting was sort of looking at what we know now, but also saying, hey, this is the Raptors of, you know, heading, this is the Raptors roster heading into that 2006 draft, where they have, you know, Chris Bosh, they have a point guard, they're set there. So I actually think they would take, you know, considering all that, they would take LaMarcus Aldridge instead of Kyle Lowry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first off, what a year for the Raptors to have the number one pick. As much as I love Kyle Lowry, as much as I respect LaMarcus Aldridge, none of these guys are number one picks, all right? In an average year, they are well, well below a number one pick. Yeah, it was a weak draft, for sure, and so the Raptors getting number one overall, that hurt, just the timing of it. But I hear you. To be honest, like, at the time, I was kind of down for LaMarcus Aldridge as a number one pick. Obviously, it's easier to, in hindsight, to say, look, I didn't want Bargnani number one. But I thought it made sense. I think people were at the time were thinking, well, you know, you need to pair LaMarcus and Chris Bosh kind of play the same position, and they kind of do, but, like, I don't know, man. Maybe take the best player available. LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, he's a walking 2010. He's really, really good. I agree with you. To be honest, if the Raptors drafted Kyle Lowry of 2006, who was coming off basically half a year at Villanova, had some injury problems. To be honest, you know, probably wouldn't have been that thrilled coming off the bench for Jose Calderon. Although, to be honest, he came off the bench for Jose Calderon and like 6 years after this draft anyway. So, you know, obviously Lowry at the time was really immature and he had to take him a long time to get to where he is now. But I think in retrospect too, though, I just think in terms of like who has affected the most winning, which is usually my criteria for all this stuff. Like, I really do think Kyle gets it, and LaMarcus is really close, because I don't want to, like, put LaMarcus's case down whatsoever. Like, he's been to the playoffs 9 times, you know, in 8 of those 9 playoff runs, he's averaged over 19 points per game. He has way more win shares. Like, I thought it would be close, but because Lowry's career obviously got off to a slow start, because he wasn't playing much in Memphis, he wasn't even playing that much in Houston, then he had the, you know, injury troubles and stuff like that, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge actually has a 111-93 lead in win shares over Lowry. And he has over 6,000 more points than Lowry, which, again, these things are just hard to deny because LaMarcus came into the league, was pretty much a 2010 guy, and continues to be that way now in his 14th season, whereas Kyle, again, got off to a slow start. But here's the thing. This is a Raptors podcast. And also, B, Kyle Lowry has a championship. It's hard to overcome this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, on the Raptors podcast, you got to go with Kyle. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think the only way you maybe go with Aldridge is when you look at a roster and you say, okay, you know, you got TJ Ford, you got Jose Calderon, what are you drafting Kyle Lowry for, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's completely fair. I think the needs at the time wouldn't. And honestly, it worked out better this way. It worked out way better that the Raptors ended up trading, you know, Gary Forbes and a first-round pick to get Lowry, and for Lowry to have matured at that time to come to Toronto and then finally fully mature into what he is now, which is a champion and a leader. I just wanted to, like, you know, with the LaMarcus thing, even though LaMarcus, I think, has been consistently just more consistent in general, I also don't think that LaMarcus has had the kind of peaks that Lowry has had. And what I mean by that is, if you look in the first 4 years of LaMarcus's career, obviously he was drafted to Portland, him and Brandon Roy came in the same draft class, which, you know, congratulations Portland, that's a great draft. But for the first 4 years, while Brandon Roy was still healthy, clearly he was better than LaMarcus. Like, he was a number one guy. I love Brandon Roy, and it's such a shame that his career ended so quickly. But the first 4 years, you know, Brandon Roy's the better player. And then later in that time, from 2014 onwards, probably Damian Lillard's rookie season, or sorry, sophomore season, Damian Lillard, I thought, was the best player for the Blazers. And then, of course, you know, LaMarcus flips teams. He goes to the Spurs. And at that point, Kawhi's the better player. And even now, with Kawhi gone, I think, honestly, with the way the two, you know, players played the last two seasons, there's a case to be made that DeMar has been better than LaMarcus the last two times. So basically, we're looking at a 3-year window for LaMarcus Aldridge where he's been the number one guy. And in those 3 years, he made the playoffs the first time in 2011. They were out in the first round, and then they missed the playoffs the other two. So you know what I mean? So even though Kyle Lowry, I don't think he's had that much of a prolonged run as the clear-cut number one guy, but I don't know, man. Lowry's, I think, had higher peaks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that can go both ways. I think when you look at both players you don't look at either guy and say, hey, this is the number one guy for a franchise, right? Mm-hmm, they're both, you know, at best, the second best player on a championship team.
Yep.
And Lowry had that opportunity last year, and he proved that he can be that good. Aldridge hasn't had that chance in terms of playing on a team at that level. So, yeah, I think, again, so much of it is just dictated by circumstance and what happens with your career. I mean, you look at the way people, Draymond Green talks about Charles Barkley now, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's no question that Charles Barkley is the better player.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's not even close, man. And I love Draymond. I really do, but come on. Come on, man. We're talking about an MVP here, man. Once you win MVP, I don't want to hear more slander for that guy. Like, it's... Well, I mean, unless it's Derrick Rose or Russell Westbrook.
I don't think you can make a mistake choosing either one. I think it's just a question of who are the pieces you're putting around those guys thereafter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for us, being in Toronto, watching the Raptors, it's got to be Kyle.
Yeah, and look, listen, when it's legitimately close, I think it's perfectly fair to give it to the guy with the title. You know what I mean? So... before we move on from the 2006 NBA draft, I wanted to look at some other nice players from this draft. So Brandon Roy, obviously, you know, his career basically was like a 4 or 5 year run, but had some incredible moments. I really enjoyed him. Definitely when he came into the league, was already one of the best shooting guards in the league. And there were some pretty good shooting guards back then. Like, it was probably, like, obviously Kobe, Wade, and then probably Brandon Roy. You know what I mean? So that's pretty impressive to be the third best at his position. Rudy Gay, obviously he's not one a potential like number one pick, but like, you know, still had a pretty successful career. JJ Redick, you know, he's had a very long career. He's, you know, one of the best three-point shooters of all time. Paul Millsap, really underrated in this case. I feel like, honestly, Millsap has a real case to be number three in this draft, which is wild because he was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And he flipped teams many times. Rajon Rondo, another guy who has a chance to be like the third guy, although his peak was oddly short. Like in the last 6 years, he's been on six different teams. And I think every fan base outside of Boston hates him.
If you could take the first half of Rondo's career and the second half of Kyle's career,
yeah,
that would be one ridiculous career.
Yeah. Yeah. But unfortunately, the second half of Rondo's career has been... Like I said, I think like the Kings. First off, he was random on the Kings. I think Kings fans probably dislike him. Mavericks fans definitely dislike him because he quit on the team.
Yeah. His only shining moment,
Lakers fans hate him right now.
Is that Pelican series?
Yeah, that's true. Against
the Blazers, you know, I mean, it looked like maybe. You know, the Bulls could have been onto something when they went up 2-0 against the Celtics.
Yeah, that's true.
He got hurt. So, you know, we would have seen if there is a postseason later this year, you know, maybe we'll see if there's a little bit of playoff Rondo left for the Lakers because they'll need all the help they can get. LeBron's going to need all the help he can get. But, yeah, you look at the second half of Rondo's career, pretty much after, I think, his first 4 or 5 seasons because – when he was with the big three, he was elite. He was phenomenal. In terms of his playmaking, he was really special at that position. And so I think everything since then, it's really kind of shocking to see that someone can sort of tail off that badly.
Yeah. But, I mean, he was also in the perfect situation, too. Like, they never really needed Rondo to score. So, because you have KG, you have Paul Pierce, you have Ray Allen. Rondo could just, whatever he gives you was kind of like gravy at that point. He could set everyone up, which is what he wanted to do anyway, and then defend, which at the time when he was younger, he was a really good defender. So, guys like PJ Tucker were in this draft, Tabo Sefolosha, Randy Foy. To be honest, so the Raptors obviously...
PJ Tucker is a top 10 pick in this draft.
Definitely. I think PJ is just outside of those other guys, you know, like Lowry, LaMarcus, Brandon Roy, Rudy Gay, JJ Redick. Paul Millsap, Rajon Rondo, PJ Tucker. Like, that's a class onto itself. Like, that's clearly the top eight. And then, really, I was looking back at this. Like, first off, the Raptors pick Andrea Bargnani first overall. Bargnani ends up accumulating a lot of numbers, but never really affects winning, ever, outside of maybe of his rookie season. And, you know, it's a real debate for me whether I want to take Andrea or, like, a guy like Thabo Sefolosha or Randy Foy. Because if you prefer Thabo or Randy Foy, then Andrea's outside of the top 10, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of put him more in the category where you're debating like Shannon Brown and
Oh,
Ronnie.
yeah.
That's where I kind of had him.
Okay.
But yeah, I think with Bargnani, I think the thing that stood out right off the bat was just like that commitment level and that intensity, that, you know, that dedication to winning, that to being the best player he could possibly be, that was never really there. You know, you could tell, you just got the sense that this was a guy that, you know, turned out to be good at basketball, and it's like, oh, this can make me money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's basically the opposite of Pascal Siakam. Yeah. So, well, there you go. I mean, look, listen.
And to think he wore the number seven.
Yeah. Well, he actually kept Kyle Lowry from wearing number seven. That's the wild part, because they overlap briefly. But yeah, I mean, it's not even. I mean, look. The top five in the draft was not that great. Okay, Bargnani was at least better than Adam Morrison, was at least better than Tyrus Thomas, was at least better than Sheldon Williams. So, yeah, the top five. Obviously, LaMarcus went number two. That one's a great pick, but everything else was just wrong in this draft. Overall, kind of a weak draft. Okay, moving on to the next one. The 2007 NBA draft. Marc Gasol goes 48th to the Los Angeles Lakers, and then before he plays for the Lakers, he's traded for his brother and starts his career in Memphis. You know, the top five in this NBA draft: Greg Oden went one, Kevin Durant went two, Al Horford three, Mike Conley four, Jeff Green five, and then I had to add in that the chairman Yi Jian Liang came number six to the Milwaukee Bucks. Great, great pick, guys. but anyway, yeah, Marc Gasol, look. Again, might be a little biased on my part, but I'm thinking Gasol number two. Obviously, Kevin Durant goes number one in this draft. It's not even close. But to me, there's a real case for Mark to be number two, and I don't think he's any lower than at least three, because the guys I'm looking at are Mike Conley, Joakim Noah, and Al Horford as contenders for who's the second best player in this NBA draft, in the 2007 draft. And for me, the totality of his career, I take Gasol over all three of those guys. Horford is probably the closest, but you know, Gasol is a he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any bias with this. I do think he is the second best player in that draft class. I think he's better than Horford. I think his impact defensively, offensively, I know Horford does a lot of great things, but I would take Gasol over Horford. I think his IQ is just even at at another higher level,
I
and
agree.
I think even as a teammate, as a veteran, you know, I think Horford kind of struggled with the dynamic in Boston, and so and now we see him, you know, kind of struggling in Philly too. So I feel like Marc Gasol is better at managing that. You look at, you know, the fact that he could come in within 20 plus games, you know, almost 30 games of the regular season, become a key cog of the Raptors and really be a pivotal player in the playoff run, the way he defended Vucevic, the way he defended Joel Embiid. And you've made this point a bunch of times last year during the championship run. The Warriors, throughout their runs to the finals, they played centers off the court,
Yep.
and they couldn't do that with Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. So yeah, I think for sure Marc Gasol goes second here. And yeah, I think Horford ends up going to Atlanta anyway at three, and Conley ends up going to Memphis too.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's the interesting part about this is just like this draft, obviously it's not necessarily talked about that much, but there's some really solid players in this draft. Definitely really enjoyed some of these guys, like even like a Joakim Noah, who I think is probably number five in this draft. Still really good player, like one defensive player of the year, two-time All-Star, made the All-NBA first team. To be honest, all-time like pesty kind of player. Like that gif of him clapping in Chris Bosh's face while LeBron's yelling at him is just, or no, while he's yelling at Mario Chalmers is just elite. But yeah, I mean, look, this is you know, the top end of this draft was pretty good. Like if you had one of the top picks, you did pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, Gasol for me, like, you know, if you look at his career, All NBA first team 2015, All NBA second team 2013, three-time All-Star, he won a championship. He's third in the draft class in win shares 80.2 behind Horford, who's at 91, oddly. And he won Defensive Player of the Year in the 2012-2013 season. And to be honest, if you're just looking at, like, legacy and stuff like that, like, he was probably the second, at worst, the second best player on those Grizzlies teams, the Grit and Grind Grizzlies. There's a case, because it was such a team effort for that team, like, there's a case to be made for Zebo. There's a case to be made for Conley. And there's a case to be made for Gasol. Obviously, Tony Allen's the fourth guy there, but he's not on the level of those other three guys. Right. But I think overall, if you just look at their skill sets, like, probably I would take Gasol as the best guy. Like, he played center. He averaged, like, 5 assists per game from the center position. Was really the best passing center in the NBA until Jokic came in. And you throw in the fact that he was great defensively. He can shoot. He can, like, was consistently a shooting threat throughout his career. And the teams made the playoffs. Like, that's the thing about the Grizzlies. Was like, okay, look, they didn't win the championship. But all those great Western Conference teams that eventually made it to the finals, and some, you know, including the Spurs or the Lakers, end up winning the championship. Like, all those great Western Conference teams, like, they struggled with the Grizzlies. Like, even the 2015 Golden State Warriors, and by this point, Grit and Grind is almost dead, right? They're almost ground to a halt at this point. But even that team struggled with the Grizzlies. They were down 2-1. So, I think Mark was part of a really, really great franchise. He made that franchise great. There was no greatness in Memphis before Marc Gasol was there. Pau Gasol was good, but, like, that team wasn't that great. And Mark, along with Conley, and, of course, along with Zebo, who came on a little later, really, really made that thing into what it was. So, yeah, I think Mark was second overall, which is, again, incredible because the Lakers took him 48th.
Yeah. And I think, again, with the win shares and stuff, you see a bit of that sort of Eastern Conference, Western Conference bias. And so, you know, Atlanta, you look at some of the regular seasons that they had, the success that they had. Were they as good as, you know, that time they won 60 games and then end up getting swept out by LeBron anyway? Like, you know, so you got to take those things into consideration. Like, you look at Marc Gasol and those Grit and Grind Grizzlies, like, they had epic battles with the Thunder, with the Spurs.
Yeah.
I mean, there was that one season where they swept the Spurs, right? So, yeah. So you're talking about a really tremendous team. I think objectively, when you're looking at just Marc Gasol and Al Horford, you would take Marc Gasol every time. You know, maybe at the start of their careers, if there is one thing you would say about Horford over Gasol, is that maybe Horford is more of a willing shooter. And so if you're looking at the draft and you're saying, oh, okay, we need a bit more individual scoring, that type of thing, then you might lean towards Horford. But if you're looking at the better overall player, I think you're taking Gasol every time.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, I also like to look back because the Raptors at this time obviously were not as competent as they were later in this in this draft class and stuff like that. But the Raptors in 2007 did not have a pick. Apparently, they would have had the 22nd pick, but that was moved to Charlotte. I don't remember what deal this was that Charlotte, the Bobcats, got the Raptors' first round pick. But the Bobcats took Jared Dudley, which honestly, Raptors could have used a guy like Jared Dudley. 3-and-D forward, like...
Yeah. I mean, you look at someone like Jared Dudley, I mean, it's possible that maybe someone like Nicholas Batum might have fallen all the way, knowing what we know now.
Well, I mean, listen, knowing Brian Colangelo, he probably would have been dying to take Nicholas Batum. Yeah. And he would have been good.
And so... Never mind. There's guys like Aaron Aflalo in this draft too. Those type of guys I think would have been interesting. But you know, one of the interesting debates I was having in my head was, you look at the longevity. Who's had the better career, Joakim Noah or Thaddeus Young?
Okay, the thing with that is just, I feel like Joakim was the number two guy on those Bulls teams.
The ceiling was higher. Yeah.
The ceiling was higher. Joakim's, I mean, to your point, like, Thad is still a productive player now. Oddly, he's with the Bulls, but he's, like, still a productive player despite being on a bad team. Whereas Joakim is, I think, out of the league. Last year he was with the Grizzlies briefly, but, you know, his career kind of petered out. But the thing with that is just, yeah, the ceiling's just not that high.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, was he ever the third best player on a playoff team?
So they made the playoffs with Philly, right? That one season.
Yeah.
Where they got bounced by Chicago, I think. Or did they lose? Or did Chicago lose to them? I can't remember now. But I think that was when Iguodala was still there.
Mm-hmm. No, the Chicago lost to them because Derrick Rose got hurt. And then they won in seven games. But even back then, like, I don't know, man. Like, AI was really good. And we're talking about Iguodala, not Allen Iverson. He's moved on at that point. Lou Williams was really good for that team. Evan Turner was really good for that team. Was Spencer Hawes there? I don't even remember, to be honest. Maybe Elton Brand or something.
But it's funny because you're looking at, say, for example, at number five, Boston takes Jeff Green and uses him in the Ray Allen trade.
That's true. That's pretty good. They got great return for that.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of just a pick, you're taking Thaddeus Young over Jeff Green every time now, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. Okay, so the 2008 NBA draft. So the Raptors, that's Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka goes 24th in the 2008 NBA draft to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Great draft for the Thunder, by the way. They got two pieces of their core four in this draft. They got Westbrook, who was picked fourth overall, which at the time, super ballsy move. But when you look back at it, Westbrook is definitely the best player at this draft. They got Westbrook, they got Serge Ibaka, and those two guys were great for them. But this one is not as easy as the 2006 draft with Lowry or the 2007 draft with Gasol. Those two guys were clearly at worst the second best player in hindsight.
One's deeper, too.
So, this one's really deep. The 2008 draft class. So first off, the top five goes Derrick Rose, number one, Michael Beasley, number two, OJ Mayo, number three, Russell Westbrook, number four, Kevin Love, number five. Now, the way I kind of looked at it was, who is clearly better than Serge Ibaka in this draft, right? Because I think we can agree Westbrook is clearly better. We can agree Kevin Love is clearly better. We can agree that even though for a very short time, but Derrick Rose's peak is so far and beyond anything that Serge Ibaka ever did that I would say Derrick Rose is better. But past that, I don't know, man. I have Serge fourth overall in this draft, which is probably a little high, but it doesn't sound as crazy as it is. Where did you have Serge?
So for the fun of it, I took Serge fourth because I was like, just imagine you go back to last year and say Marcus Gasol goes second to Seattle, and now Ibaka gets picked fourth here, and they start their careers together.
Oh man!
Like
wow, yeah,
that's crazy, right? Yeah. I have him fourth. I think the interesting debates are probably Brook Lopez.
Yep.
And you look at his peak, and even now he continues to be a key part of that Bucks team, a key part of their defense, and the way he spaces the floor. Obviously, not shooting the ball as well this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's someone that you would sort of look at and debate. But then I looked at Serge. You know, those first few years in the league, the defensive impact. The way he could block shots, he had a fairly high ceiling too. And so, yeah, you're right. In terms of if you look at the list of, say, him, Gallinari, Brook Lopez, and then you can sort of just maybe a tier below that, DeAndre Jordan, Goran Dragic, Eric Gordon, you can't really say any of those guys are definitively better than him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable with Ibaka at four over there. And again, maybe if you have a need at the position and you need some shooting, you go with Gallo, that type of thing. But yeah, I'm comfortable with Serge being effectively the second best big man in that draft class.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, the closest guy is Lopez, and Lopez is, he's a better offensive player. He's always had more of a post game, like way more of a post game than Serge, and maybe outside shooting wise it's comparable because Serge actually shoots a better percentage, but at the same time, like the volume and the volume matters in this case, and I think Lopez is still pretty effective offensively on that end. despite basically shooting like 30%. Again, Giannis, man, please do better for yourself. Like, love yourself. Come to Toronto. And the case for Lopez is also that, you know, he was the leading guy at least at some point. Obviously Brooklyn, well, I guess New Jersey when he was there too, they weren't that great, but like, you know, they had Brook Lopez at least, and he was a number one guy. They could function. They weren't great. Again, they missed the playoffs. They were, you know, a bottom 10 team, but he still functioned as a number one guy, whereas you can never imagine Serge functioning as a number one guy. He just doesn't have that ability. But defensively, Serge hasn't beat, even though now Lopez is really good defensively. For a while, he really wasn't. You look at Serge, he led the league in blocks twice. In one of those seasons, he averaged 3.7 blocks per game. Like, what?
That's insane.
That's nuts, man, because he gets 3.7 blocks a week now. he's three times all-defensive first team for Serge Ibaka. That's very impressive. Not a lot of players can say that. Even Marcus Hall has not been three times all-defensive player first team.
But it shows how much the stats matter, right?
Yeah.
When you lead the league in shot blocking. Like, for me, even this season, for me, Marcus Hall is the better defensive player than Rudy Gobert.
Okay.
But Rudy Gobert is going to get the love because he has, like, the block shots and all that. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And he'll touch your microphone if you say otherwise. with Serge, I mean, and also he has a championship, which, again, like, if it's close to me, I'm giving the ring. I'm giving the edge to the ring. And maybe that's not fair because obviously everyone on the Raptors has a ring, but... Hey, man, listen. Serge actually contributed, you know what I mean? Like, you think about Game 7. What Serge did in terms of that scoring, in terms of the threes. I was actually looking back at it, you know, ranking the best players sort of on the Raptors last year in the playoff run. To me, Serge came in number 5. And, you know, if you look at Kawhi obviously being the most impactful, Pascal, Kyle, and then I would put Mark ahead of Serge just because Mark defensively was really, really solid. But Serge is he's 5, and he's closer to 4 than he is closer to 6. 6 is obviously Van Vliet. Danny Green 7. Serge had some great moments in the finals too. Like, there were games where he was putting up like 4 blocks, you know, like putting up close to 20 points, and a lot of those games on the road. I just remember Serge like really coming alive and winning that DeMarcus Cousins matchup. So again, like, some of these moments, you know, when I say the difference goes to a guy who has a ring, is like, when I see you make that kind of like impact and contribution on the NBA's biggest stage, like, that to me is worth more than the fact that Brook Lopez averaged like an additional 4 or 5 points per game, you know, while no one was at the Izod Center. Like, it just matters more, that's, man.
That's fair.
So,
Devin Harris hours.
Yeah. Wow. Other guys to consider from this draft, I mean, as you mentioned, Eric Gordon, Gallinari, Goran Dragic, George Hill, low-key, has been pretty impactful, but come on, man, George Hill's not ahead of Serge Ibaka. Nicola Batum, Ryan Anderson, Robin Lopez, and the guy I wanted to put on this list, Roy Hibbert, who, I mean, he's not like the fourth best player in this draft by any means, but I just wanted to bring up Roy Hibbert because, again, the Raptors at the time had the opportunity to pick Roy Hibbert with the 17th pick, but instead they traded that pick to Indiana for Jermaine O'Neal so that they could form the triple towers of Jermaine O'Neal, Andrea Bargnani, and Chris Bosh, man. They traded for Jermaine O'Neal so that they could put Bargnani in the number one pick at small forward. It failed miserably, and again, whatever. Like, it's not like Roy Hibbert was going to be this huge difference maker. But Roy Hibbert was actually a pretty good player for a while. Like, you know what I mean? He anchored a team that really pushed LeBron to the brink in the playoffs as well. That's a lot more than what Jermaine O'Neal did for the Raptors.
Yeah, and again, if you're drafting a team for 2008, he does still go high, right? Because type of basketball that was being played at that time, the relevance of the center position, like, he's one of those centers that just got ushered out by the three-point era, right? Mm-hmm. He was Mr. Verticality. Before everyone, all of the sort of elite bigs started doing it. And so, again, I think he's someone that gets hurt by recency bias, but I thought he was a huge part of those Pacers teams. And, you know, you look at the value of him versus say, an Eric Gordon now,
yeah,
everyone's like, oh man, Eric Gordon, no brainer. But back then, it was like, no, Roy Hibbert, no brainer, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, things like that, you know, again, because of the shift in the league, I think hurts him. Like, you know, back then, DeAndre Jordan was exciting, but in terms of winning basketball,
yeah,
you're probably taking Roy Hibbert. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that type of stuff is interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to bring it up because, again, I'm just angry at how bad the Raptors were at the NBA draft in the first three picks. And then if you compare it to what after Masai and Bobby and company took over the team, like what they did with their picks, because they're way better. So, but yeah, Serge, man, fourth overall in the 2008 redraft. Like, congratulations to Serge. Like, that's impressive because he came in 24th overall. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's been an incredible career for Serge Ibaka. Congratulations.
Low-key, before we move on, you know, this is sort of a forgotten phase of the Raptors, but when they made that trade for Sean Marion, that actually fit way better. Like, that Sean Marion, Bargnani, Bosch trio fit way better than Jermaine O'Neal.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, Marion gave the rebounding that Bargnani wasn't,
mm-hmm.
and he could still defend the perimeter guys. So that was actually low-key a kind of fun team to watch.
Yeah. I mean, this is the weird thing about the Sean Marion thing was, like, he was here for, like, 30 games. And then he dipped. And, like, I don't remember a single thing about that era, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right, though. Like, stylistically, it fit better. But I think because they took on Marion from the Heat, that actually, because they traded Jermaine O'Neal to Miami, and the reason Miami got Jermaine O'Neal was because he was a large expiring contract in the summer of 2010. And that way they were able to go out and sign Chris Bosh. So, again, I mean, I don't know if you really won that deal, if you ultimately created the opportunity to lose Chris Bosh to Miami at that point. But, okay.
The number of BC stories, like, it's wild. Like, you talked about Colangelo being excited to draft Nicola Batum if he had the chance.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this story, but when the Raptors... I can't remember if they traded for Juan Dixon or they signed him as a free agent.
I traded for him.
I don't know if you remember this story that when Colangelo went to meet him for the first time, one of the first things he said to him was, I thought you were Spanish.
He's like, oh, I thought you were the conquistador, Juan Dixon. Didn't know you were an NBA player, but I would have picked you anyway. Mauricio Gherardini swore that Juan Dixon was... Yeah, wow, damn. That's unbelievable, man. That's unbelievable. Honestly, the Colangelo years, very tumultuous, but definitely a lot of stories from that time. Okay, so those are the three old guys, all right? Kyle, Mark, Serge. The next, I guess, most experienced player would be Norman Powell in the 2015 NBA draft. So the Raptors have three guys on the roster from the 2015 NBA draft. They have Norman Powell, who was picked 46 by the Toronto Raptors. Well, by the Milwaukee Bucks. Thank you for that, by the way. In exchange for Gervais Vasquez. Definitely a great deal for Toronto. Roddy Hollis Jefferson, who's on the roster. He went 23rd overall in 2015. And Stanley Johnson, who went 8th overall in 2015. Let's start with Norm. So ultimately, I had Norm 10th overall. And it feels a little generous because I do feel like I'm more heavily weighing this current season of Norm, where he's been fantastic, as compared to the first four seasons where Norm had flashes but was very inconsistent. But the way I kind of worked back was I looked at which players were clearly better than Norm from this draft. So I got Karl-Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, Kristaps Porzingis, Devin Booker, and Miles Turner. Like, those guys, for me, are definitively better. And then you got guys like Montrezl Harrell, Josh Richardson, Kelly Oubre, and Justice Winslow. And to be honest, I kind of got all four of those guys ahead of Norm as well. You know, that's more debatable for me, but that's how I ultimately settled on 10, because I got those guys, those nine players ahead of Norm. But where did you have Norm in the 2015 NBA
draft? So I actually have him 9th.
Okay.
Because I had him ahead of Justice Winslow, just because of the injuries. And availability is a big thing. And
that's true.
Norm has been very available. Just, you know, for some reason, some coaches have preferred to play Damari Carroll. And
I mean, hey, man, to be fair, DeMar Carroll's making like 60 mil.
So, you know, those are the issues that he's kind of had to deal with in his career. I'm glad he's finally sort of come into his own. Frankly, I even had DeLon Wright ahead of Justice Winslow.
Okay.
So, I was, in terms of debating where Winslow goes, I had him with, like, Rashawn Holmes.
Oh, wow, and, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I feel like you're Rashawn Holmes can come on this season. Him, you know, you look at a guy like Bobby Portis, obviously he's got the off-court issues, but he can score.
Yeah.
So, again, like, you know, I think with every player that gets drafted, there's only so long that you can kind of ride your potential.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at what Justice Winslow's potential was coming into the draft,
yeah,
I mean, I think he's been way below expectations when you look at his career thus far.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I think that's completely fair.
He just hasn't been there.
Yeah, look, I think that's fair, but I mean, at the same time, I really liked what Winslow did for the Heat last season. Like, he kind of played point guard for a bit. Last year for the Heat, he averaged 12.6 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 4.3 assists. Shot the three at a pretty decent rate at 37%. And, you know, just overall, to me, like, to the eye test, I was like, I'm kind of impressed. Like, this is a starting level player. He can do some things both ways. Not necessarily a dominant player, but definitely could do some things. Obviously, this year he's been so banged up and he got traded. So, you know, whatever. But listen.
In five seasons, he's played under 20 games twice.
Yeah, no, that's a real problem, man. It's a real problem that he gets hurt so much. And even though he's not like a sure thing when he's healthy, too. So I get that. But I don't know. There's something about Winslow. Like, I just like, I like that type of player. And from that one season, I really did buy into it. Like, maybe I'm not as crazy on Winslow as, like, the Memphis Grizzlies were to just, like, take on, like, Solomon Hill's contract as well to justify Winslow. But, you know, I kind of rate him. But to be honest, if you want to say Norm's better than Winslow, like, I'm not going to make that big of an argument because, you know, Norm this season has been really, really, really good. The only thing with Norm is just, like, look, the last 4 years before this, the first 4 years of Norm's career, he was really inconsistent. And so that does hurt. That really does hurt. Like, Norm really lost his way for a couple of those years, and he finally broke out, and it's amazing it did it. But I kind of maybe want to see a little bit more longevity out of that as well. But
that's fair.
Yeah. Some of the other guys, though, I mean, you know, so that's the thing. Norm has probably the most upward mobility between some of these guys. Like, if you tell me next year, would I rather have Norm or Winslow? It's real debatable. Like, I think Norm can continue this level, and if he does, then yeah, he would be above Winslow. He might be above a guy like Kelly Oubre, who, you know, he's doing good things for the Phoenix Suns, but that's still the Phoenix Suns. Like, that's not even a playoff team. Norm's contributing to a playoff team. Josh Richardson, he's had a pretty decent career, and he's had a pretty nice moments with the Heat. Like, last year, he's averaging, like, close to 17 points per game, so I appreciate that, I guess. And he's pretty good defensively. He can handle the ball a little bit more and play make a little bit more than Norm as well. But yeah, I mean, look, listen, for Norm to go from the 46th pick to now 9th for you,
top 10, yeah,
and 10th for me, like, that's awesome. That's really, really good. What about a guy like Rondé? So Rondé goes 23rd overall. Again, you know, the guys that are clearly better than Rondé, this list is a lot longer, but we've got Towns, Russell, Porzingis. For me, Winslow, Miles Turner, Devin Booker, Kelly Oubre, Terry Rozier, DeLon Wright, Montrezl Harrell, Norman Powell, you know, and Josh Richardson. And so that's 12 guys right there that are clearly definitively better than Rondé. And then we're looking at a group like Bobby Portis, Willie Cauley-Stein, you know, Chetty Osman, Rashawn Holmes, Larry Nance, you know, Trey Lyles, Kevon Looney, like, yeah.
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 No, I mean, I would take those guys over Rondé.
All of those guys?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, unless you've just got, like, a really great offensive team and all you want is defensive help, then you go Rondé. But yeah, I think DeLon is clearly better. Rashawn Holmes, I think the way he's played this season, I would definitely take him. Larry Nance, I think, is a solid role player. When you factor in sort of the chemistry stuff, then you could maybe make the case for Rondé over Bobby Portis.
Listen, when you talk about that chemistry stuff, are you talking about the time that Bobby Portis punched out Nikola Mirotic?
Yeah.
After he admitted that.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
After one of my favorite NBA stories, and you can look this up, is Bobby Portis once said in an interview, he plays with a type of fury where he envisions that his opponent punched his mom, and that's how he approaches games, that his opponent punched his mom, which is... Look, man, I get it. You got to motivate yourself, but that is not the way to motivate yourself, man. You don't need to imagine that bodily harm to your mom, man. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. But, like, I even like a guy like Trey Lyles.
Yeah.
I thought he was a solid contributor in Utah. Maybe he's, like, slipped a little in San Antonio because, you know, their expectations, you know, you do exactly, you know, what we ask of you. Mm-hmm. And until you learn that, you're not really going to see much time. So I think he struggled with that a little bit.
I mean, but hey, that's pretty much how the Toronto Raptors handle Rondo.
That's true. And yeah. He did figure it out. So credit to him
for
figuring it out, because he was definitely in the doghouse to start the season.
Yeah.
I think maybe an interesting debate is when you get to like a Kevon Looney and a Willie Hernan Gomez. Because Looney, I think, has been unlucky with injuries. I think, mm-hmm. you know, I think he's a decent center option that's just been unlucky with injuries. So, again, when you start factoring health and that type of stuff. But, yeah, I would take Rondé over, say, a guy like, you know, Mario Hezonja, who went quite early in this draft.
Fifth. And,
yeah. So when you look at where their careers are at right now, I'd rather have Rondé than him.
Yeah.
And I was, frankly, someone who was pretty high on Hezonja. Right. And I thought he'd figure it out. But he hasn't to this point.
Yeah.
So, maybe he just about sneaks into the top 20. But
yeah.
Either way, I still think, he's in the first round. He's maybe just in those early 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I got him 20. Because this draft wasn't that deep in terms of just mid-tier guys. And you know, at this point, we're talking about drafts that are so recent that some of these guys still have potential. They could still take a leap in their careers. So it's hard to say. Yeah. But, this draft really falls off, because if you're talking about mid-20s, we're talking about guys like RJ Hunter and Rakeem Christmas and, you know, stuff like that. So, it's like, would you rather have Rondé or Pat Connaughton or whatever? But even if you put Connaughton in there, he's probably still around 20. So I'm keeping Rondé at roughly 20. Stanley Johnson, he went 8th overall in this draft. My only question to you really is Stanley Johnson still a first round pick if you were to redraft the 2015 draft? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, even towards the end of the draft, like anyone that's had any type of productivity in the NBA from this draft class is going ahead of Stanley Johnson.
Oh, come on, man.
So
come on, man. Come on.
Jahlil Okafor is still going ahead of him.
Okay, fair.
Tyus Jones is definitely going ahead of him.
Yep.
Jerian Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Decker.
Sam Decker? Come on,
Sam
man.
Sam Decker has actually had multiple productive games.
What are we talking about? Yo?
Stanley Johnson has had, like, two.
What about Justin Anderson?
Come on, man. Justin Anderson was with the 905. No, I'll leave Justin Anderson out.
Who did better for the 905, Justin Anderson or Stanley Johnson?
Like, the real debate is who's getting drafted first, Stanley Johnson or Cameron Payne?
Oh, boy. Man, the Raptors really had a lot of guys from this draft. Okay, he's ahead of Cameron Payne. Cameron Payne.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's okay. Where he is in the draft.
Okay, so to me, the reason I asked you this is, again, because I don't think the draft runs that deep. Because there's... Stanley Johnson is 22nd in points in this draft. The 20 players above him, I would say, are definitely better than him. The one guy I said was below him was Mario Hezonja, which is kind of debatable, but I really don't think Hezonja is very good. So maybe I'm putting him out of that. So we're talking about 20 players right there. Guys like Osman, DeLon Wright, Tyus Jones, Jerian Grant, Pat Connaughton, Kevon Looney, those guys all average less than Stanley Johnson in scoring, but I would rather have those guys. So yeah. We're talking about, like, definitely 26 players, maybe 27 players better than Stanley. But then past that point, you know, you know, he's probably still sneaking at 30th or something like that. So
yeah,
I'm keeping Stanley in the top, the top of the 2015 NBA draft. I still believe in Stanley. You know, he could still do something, maybe.
I mean, shoot. I mean, looking back on it, I'm kind of wishing, you know, at least Satnam Singh will give me content.
Oh my god, yo! How do we jump to this? How do we jump to? Yo, by the way, when you're watching the Jordan doc last weekend on that that stream link I sent you, when you were watching the Jordan doc, at one point they're talking about Jordan going golfing with someone, and they kept saying Satnam Singh, and that's all I could hear. Do you know what I'm talking about on the broadcast? I was so confused, man.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about, but I have no idea what they were actually saying. Yeah. So I let that be. But yeah, I had to give the Brown man a shout out, man. We don't get to see many of those in the NBA.
Wow, there you go. Okay, so that's the 2015 NBA draft. Again, the Raptors did pretty well because they got Norm, who in our redraft goes, you know, between 9 and 10, and the Raptors picked him at 46, so that's great value. Moving on to the 2016 NBA draft, this one's very, very interesting because the Raptors took Pascal Siakam 27th in this draft class. You know, Fred VanVleet goes undrafted. It'll be very interesting to see where you think he goes undrafted. And, of course, Pat McCaw was also in this draft class. He went 28th to the Golden State Warriors. Let's start with Pascal Siakam. Are you in agreement with me that Pascal goes first overall in this redraft? Or are you a Ben Simmons stan?
No, I think Pascal Siakam goes number one, mainly because I feel like his game is more portable. There's just more different types of teams that he can fit into.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that makes him the better player. And again, you look at the value of the jump shot now, like there's still strides that Ben Simmons needs to make and take in that area. So as elite as Ben Simmons is defensively and the playmaking that he can provide, you know, again, we talk a lot about LeBron being like a one-man fast break. Like Ben Simmons, like when he gets the ball on the run,
oh yeah,
there's really not much you can do. So, but yeah, overall, I think right now to this point, I would take Pascal Siakam first overall. But yeah, Ben Simmons definitely the second best player in this draft to me. Though, you know, Brandon Ingram has made things interesting this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, Simmons, I agree, is the closest one. You know, Ingram, I still want to see him do it for a little bit longer and sort of affect winning. Maybe it's not necessarily fair for him to just be like, all right, I want Brandon Ingram to lead the Pelicans to the playoffs or whatever. But, you know, still, I'd like to see those numbers sort of just impact winning a little bit more. And Jaylen Brown, honestly, has had a really nice breakout year for the Celtics. He's really made good on his potential. He's averaging 20 points per game this season on 49% shooting from the field and 38% from three. And he's really good defensively, and he's only 23. So there's really a case. And there's even a guy like Jamal Murray in this draft who, again, maybe it's because we're in Canada, we overrate Jamal Murray just a little bit because of that. But still, like, he's, you know, he's been the second option on the Nuggets, who were second overall in the East, in the West last year, and third in the West this season before the league shut down. So there's a case for Murray as well, but I agree, it's mostly versus Simmons versus Siakam. When you look at Simmons, okay, so he wins Rookie of the Year. You know, maybe some people will argue he wasn't a rookie because he was chilling the first year, but whatever. Okay, so he wins Rookie of the Year as a sophomore. Whatever, that's fine, I guess. That's like being the best the best 12th grader as a grade 11 kid. He's second. He's a two-time All-Star, which no other player in this draft can say. Ingram and Siakam were both first-time All-Stars, as was Sabonis, who was 9th in this draft, or 10th in this draft. You know, Simmons, he leads this draft in total points, in total rebounding, in total assists. He's by far and away the best win shares guy. And he's only 23, but really, to me, the difference between Simmons and Siakam, even besides all of that, is just I kind of look at when these two guys went head-to-head, what were the results? And Siakam in the conference finals, and the conference finals in which he got hurt, and he hurt his groin, but Siakam averaged 19 points per game, he averaged 6 rebounds, 2 steals, and he was so good and so effective, especially in that game one where he came out just guns blazing. That the Sixers had to change. They had to adapt what they were doing as a team to guard against Siakam. They had to put a defensive player of the year level type talent in Joel Embiid to guard Siakam, whereas the Raptors didn't have to make any adjustments with Ben Simmons. It was cool. Like, if we put Kyle Lowry and Ben Simmons, that's fine. If we put Kawhi on Ben Simmons, that's fine. Honestly, if Danny had to guard Ben Simmons for a couple possessions, that's fine. Pascal can definitely guard Ben Simmons. Where the Raptors struggled was sort of like, how do you contain Embiid? How do you contain Jimmy Butler? Things like that. Those were issues, but they never really had to worry about Ben Simmons. And Simmons averaged 11 points per game in the conference semifinals last year. His main benefit, obviously, was as a playmaker, but he averaged 4.9 assists per game against 2.4 turnovers, so a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And, like, I don't know, man. I can't get out of my head the fact that in Game 7, all Ben Simmons was doing was either running over Kyle Lowry and getting called for charges, or just standing in the dunker spot waiting for a pass and never came. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
yeah. No, I think I would take it even one step further where, you know, I look at, of course, you know, the playoffs matter the most, and you make some great points, but you even look at this season, that early matchup that the Sixers had with the Raptors, and the Raptors were without Ibaka, without Kyle Lowry, and Philly clearly had the advantage. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, yeah. Gasol holding Embiid to 0 points had a lot to do with that win, but again, you know, those are situations where Philly is favored, and even if Embiid's struggling, Simmons has got to find something, find a different way to impact the game, and I don't think he's proven that. I mean, there's been, again, we've seen at times where, like, there's just straight chemistry issues where, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. you see the flow of the offense better when Ben Simmons is out there without Embiid. You see Embiid thrive when Simmons isn't there, so there's some of that. Where, you know, you think, okay, if Simmons has the right fit around him, maybe he can reach his max potential. And I don't think he can reach his max potential playing next to Embiid. Right. At the same time, you know, you probably look at Embiid and say that's the only way you have a championship ceiling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think Philly's got a tough situation with those two. Mm-hmm. I think they need to just figure out which one they want to commit to and try to get assets back for the other one and build the right way around one of them. And I think that's their route to a higher ceiling than what they have now. But right now, I think it's just a mess with their situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and this is another thing for Simmons is that, look, he's only 23, whereas Pascal, I think, is already 26. So you might look at, oh, wow, Simmons has more upside. But, I mean, like, upside is sort of relative, right? Like, we've seen guys like Kyle develop late in his career and really take steps. What I look at is which player has made tangible improvements. Ben Simmons as a rookie versus Ben Simmons now, not that different. I'm sure Ben Simmons has improved in marginal ways. Maybe he makes better reads or whatever offensively. But we're talking about the same flaws. We're talking about the same strength. That's the same dude. Pascal Siakam.
He still has bad turnovers.
Yeah, well, because he jumps and defenders are not jumping with him. They're basically saying you can shoot, and then he has to jump and throw a pass, and a lot of times those become turnovers. But, you know, Simmons hasn't really changed as a player, whereas Siakam has shown so much improvement every single year that I'm like, all right, well, I mean, I don't know, man. I see a guy in Siakam who is more coachable than Ben Simmons is. Like, literally, you got Brett Brown in the media begging Ben Simmons, yo, just take 1-3 a game. I don't care if it's a brick. Just shoot 1-3 a game. And Ben Simmons is like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to shoot 1-3. Whereas Siakam accepts any role that's given to him. He's shown real tangible growth. And he's very humble about the fact that he still needs to improve. If you hear what Ben Simmons says about his jump shot, he's like, look, I can succeed in spite of it. You know what I mean? I don't have to do that. It's a little bit of that DeMar DeRozan thing of like, look, I'm so good at the mid-range. Why do I gotta, you know, shoot a three? Whereas Ben Simmons is like, I'm so good at shooting layups. Why do I need to do anything else? You can't even really shoot free throws well either. So, you know, you compare that to what Siakam says. And Siakam is humble at every single step. He's like, look, I know where I'm now, but I have a goal in mind. I want to be the best version of myself. I need to work on being a playmaker. I need to work on being the number one guy. I need to work on all these moves. Like, he's always talking about how much more he needs to improve. So when I see that mentality as well, like, I give that edge to Siakam.
Yeah, no, you make a great point about Ben Simmons and DeRozan, that comp, in terms of their stubbornness to change. And with Siakam, I think to add to, yeah, sure, you can look at the age and say 26, 23, but when you look at basketball experience, Ben Simmons has been playing this game for a long time.
That's true.
And Pascal Siakam has not.
Yeah.
And so when I look at that and you look at the lessons that Siakam still has to learn, you look at the way he'll be able to take this season, whether it continues or not, the lessons he's taken right from game one. And honestly, if this season doesn't continue, it's almost going to be like a blessing in disguise that he had to play all those games without Kyle and without Serge and without Mark. And, you know, because it puts so much more of the onus on him that if the team is healthy next season, he is going to be able to pick defenses apart. And we saw that towards the end of the season. You look at, you know, those games against Sacramento on the road, against Golden State, the way he was closing out those games.
Man, Utah.
There was a real maturity and understanding of how to sort of take what the defense gives you and close teams out.
Yeah, Pascal, man. I mean, come on, man. Pascal over Ben Simmons. Come on, this is not even close. Okay, Fred VanVleet. So yeah, he goes undrafted. Well, yeah. It's okay. So Fred VanVleet goes undrafted 2016. To me, again, the same approach. You know, who's clearly better than VanVleet? I would say Siakam is. I'd say Ben Simmons is, even though I just spent all this time slandering Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is a better player than Fred VanVleet at this point. Brandon Ingram's better. Jaylen Brown's better. Jamal Murray. Sabonis is better. He's just made an all-star team. And even a guy like Buddy Hield. I mean, like, again, like, you know, Sacramento hasn't done anything. And, you know, maybe Hield should be more impactful towards winning, but you know, early in his career so far, you know, he's hit 20 points per game. He's been one of the most prolific 3-point shooters in the NBA, and you know, it's just, I kind of value what Hield does. If you really want to make an argument, I can entertain it, but I do think Buddy Hield, at least right now, with the upside and the scoring stuff like that, is a little bit ahead of Fred VanVleet. But past that, I mean, I don't know, man. So Fred for me is going like 9th overall for me. And that's might be honestly a little bit detrimental to Fred, because again, he's won a championship and things like that. But where did Fred VanVleet go for you in a redraft of the 2016 NBA draft?
So I had a few guys ahead of him.
Okay.
I don't know. So I'm assuming you consider him better than Malcolm Brogdon at this point.
Brogdon's the 8th guy I said was a little bit ahead of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had Brogdon ahead of him. And then I think because there's so much potential left to see, I put DeJounte Murray ahead of him as well.
Yeah.
Because I really think he's super talented, and I think he's just been unlucky with the injuries. And I think this is the fun part of looking at these drafts now is we're still factoring in so much potential, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And, so it's going to get a lot more subjective now in terms of what you're thinking, what I'm thinking. So, you know, for me, looking long term, I'm still looking at DeJounte Murray and saying, you know, this is someone that can be super impactful on both ends of the floor. And Fred, you know, I almost wonder how close he is to his ceiling kind of thing. And so with that, maybe that's why I sort of tilted the scales in favor of DeJounte. And then, yeah, I have Domantas Sabonis out of him. So I have Fred pretty much 11th.
Okay.
And so he's ahead of guys like Caris LeVert. He's ahead of Ivica Zubac, Jakob Poeltl, Malik Beasley, Furkan Korkmaz, Torian Prince, those type of guys.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I thought about Murray as well. He's on my sort of list of considerations in terms of contenders with Fred. I see the upside point for sure, because you look at it, you know, he's a big point guard, like 6'5". He's got a big wingspan, really, really quick as well, you know. But the thing with DeJounte is just like, look, man, I don't know how much I trust a point guard in the modern NBA who takes 1.6 3-point attempts per game, and that's actually a career high this year for DeJounte. And you know, on those 1.6 threes, no one's really guarding him for those, and he's still only shooting like 36%, whereas Fred has been a lights out 3-point shooter from the jump. Like, even when he was a rookie, in the few games he played, he was a really good three-point shooter, and has been around 40%. And this season, I've been really impressed with the fact that Fred has scaled up the volume of threes that he's taken and still kept his percentages really high. There are always going to be physical limitations with Fred. Like, you know, his two-point percentage was not even high in college, so I don't expect it to be high in, you know, the pros, where there's, like, seven-footers on every single team. But at the same time, like, when you factor in the leadership, you know, when you factor in the defense, you know, a big part of DeJounte's game is defense. While Fred's really, really freaking good. I'd love to see DeJounte Murray do as good of a job on Steph Curry as Fred did last year. So, you know, for me, like, you know, the thing with Fred is, look, when you consider this draft thing, you're always going to end up making the mistake that other people made, right? The reason Fred VanVleet goes undrafted is because you look at him and you're like, this guy's 5'10", all right? Can't really jump that much. You know, he can shoot, but can't really finish that much. You know, his ceiling is limited. We're talking about a guy low ceiling, low potential, at least us on paper. And so people are always going to pass on him for guys who are more flashy, like DeJounte Murray. But for me, I'm like, look, I've seen what Fred done. I've seen Fred improve. I've seen Fred sort of make a game for himself. I've seen Fred take a leap this year to becoming a starter. He's, you know, become a better playmaker as well. So, and the fact that, look, man, he's won a title and he's clutch as hell, man. That's the thing. Like, him being clutch, it's hard because it's not necessarily something that's super tangible. But I'm telling you, from now until the end of his career, Fred VanVleet will always be one of, no matter which team he's on, no matter who's coaching him, that coach is picking Fred VanVleet to be on the floor in those final moments because they know that Fred VanVleet can be trusted and that Fred VanVleet's willing to take a big shot. So maybe it's intangibles because we watch Fred a lot more closer than DeJounte, but I got Fred top 10, which is, again, for a guy who's undrafted, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I mean, either way, between the two of us, he's going top 15, right? So
yeah. Yeah. And then Brogdon is interesting, but, I mean, you know, I think Brogdon's
I think LeVert is interesting too. I think because of the injuries, we sort of knock LeVert and, you know, cast him aside. But when we've seen LeVert at his best,
yeah,
like, man, that was a hard player to pass up on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he almost snapped the Raptors' 15-game win streak. Well, I guess he ended up doing it anyway because we ended up losing to the Brooklyn Nets. But the first time, he would have snapped it earlier.
OG shut him down.
Yeah. But I mean, they had to, though. He had like 38 or something. He was nasty that game. And then Pat.
Speaking of OG.
We'll get to OG, but don't forget about Pat. By the way, I looked it up on Basketball Reference. Pat McCaw, in Basketball Reference, they list like every single player's like nicknames and stuff like that. Pat McCaw's nickname. You want to guess what Pat McCaw's nickname is?
Three time?
No. That's a good guess.
Hit me.
Pat, that's it. Yo, that can't be your nickname, man. That's like saying my nickname is Will. Like, yeah, it doesn't, yeah. Anyway, so Pat McCaw, my only question is, okay, so he goes 28th overall to the Golden State Warriors. Is he still a first-round pick?
I think he goes higher than 28th.
Yeah, I agree. I know people hate on Pat McCaw, but he's actually done useful things for a winning team, which a lot of these players haven't.
Yeah, like he's close to the top 20 because I'm looking at the players that were available. Again, you know, those other players I mentioned, Jakob Poeltl, Ivica Zubac, Malik Beasley, Furkan Korkmaz, Juan Hernan Gomez, Taurean Prince, Chris Dunn. Like, you know, sure, you take those guys ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like you start debating, okay, I think I'd rather have Patrick McCaw than Dragan Bender because he hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
And then you can have the debate with Marquise Chris. Was he in a bad situation? And now is he starting to figure things out? In Golden State, he's going ahead of Thon Maker. Thon Maker hasn't really done anything to this point.
Wait, hold on. But Dwayne Casey says Thon Maker is the next Pascal Siakam. What's going on?
What? I thought he said that about Sekou Doumbouya.
He also said that about Bruce Brown, if you believe it or not. Honestly, Dwayne Casey just sees Pascal Siakam everywhere.
Oh man!
Like Luke Kennard, the next Pascal Siakam.
Oh man!
Yeah.
So, I think Patrick McCaw is pretty close to the top 20 here.
Yeah.
If not in the top 20.
I agree with you, man. I agree with you. So listen, and plus, look, it's just a known fact that Patrick McCaw has never not won an NBA championship. It's just a known fact. All right. So again, a lot of these, Pat McCaw and LeBron have the same number of rings. I'll just say that much. Next one, the 2017 NBA draft. So OG Anunoby, the Raptors pick him 23rd overall. The guys that I have definitively better than OG, at least right now, I got Jason Tatum. I got, Fox. I got Mitchell. I got John Collins. Bam Adebayo. And I put Lonzo on here. And that one might be controversial, but I really, really like Lonzo's game. And I really think that he's really had a nice year this year in New Orleans. He's averaging 12, 6, and 7. He's shooting 38% from three. And he's shooting a lot of threes now, and a lot of them off the dribble, too. So I've always really liked Lonzo, and I really believe in his game. But those are the guys I have clearly ahead of OG. But the guys that are probably comparable, there's a debate to be had with Jonathan Isaac, which probably I would take him over OG, but though if you look at his numbers, honestly, very similar. Lauri Markkanen, definitely better scorer. Derek White, you know, different skill set. Luke Kennard, obviously next Pascal Siakam. Jared Allen, Markel Fultz, you know, even at DeLon Brooks, who's averaging like close to 16 points per game this year. But for me, honestly, OG went like eighth overall in the redraft of 2017. Where did OG fall in for you?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Like I had, the only guys I had ahead of him were Tatum, Bam Adebayo, Donovan Mitchell, Jonathan Isaac, De'Aaron Fox, Lonzo Ball, and John Collins.
Okay.
And then my debate was more I had OG pretty much tossed in there with Lauri Markkanen, Thomas Bryant. And then you get into the Derek Whites and the Kyle Kuzmas and Jared Allens and whatnot. So, yeah, I think maybe, you know, if you're a team that has a scoring need, you go with Markkanen and you can't really argue that. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to judge any of the young Bulls guys this season just because of how bad a coach Jim Boylan's been for that team.
Mm-hmm.
So, between Thomas Bryant, I think he's really come on these last, season and a half kind of thing, depending on what you're looking for at center. So I think he's in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
OG defensively, obviously, he looks like a perennial all defensive player.
Yep.
And so it's a question of whether, you know, I don't want to say offense catch up to that level because I don't see him getting to be, you know, that caliber of a player. But as long as he can be, a consistent three-point threat, over 35%, 30, if he can hit, 37, 38% from three consistently, because you're assuming the majority of his shots are coming from the corner, then I think you've really got something. If he can develop a couple of one-on-one moves, even better. Then I think for sure you would say you would take him over Markkanen. But, I had him eighth overall.
Yeah. And look, listen, the Jonathan Isaac thing, I mean, look, I don't want to sound too much like a homer, but when I looked into the numbers, it was actually shockingly close. Like, I could see the case for OG being on his level and maybe even slightly better. Like this year, Isaac, obviously he went down with injury and it's really unfortunate, but you know, he was having a breakout year for him, 12 points per game, 7 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 1.6 steals. The really impressive thing with Isaac was averaging 2.4 blocks this year, which is just kind of unheard of. And he's just longer than OG, but OG's number are very similar. Like 11 points per game for OG, 5.4 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.4 steals. Doesn't have the 2.4 blocks, and that's a big difference between 0.7 and 2.4. But OG shoots better from, is a better finisher from the field. His shot more efficiently from three, although Isaac does a little bit more experimenting for a team that doesn't have as many creators as Toronto does. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's shockingly close how close he is to a guy like Isaac, and everyone loves Isaac. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
OG's, I mean, he's had a really good year, man. I'm really happy for him. And
I think it's just aesthetically, like when I look at a guy like Isaac,
mm-hmm.
and then I look at a guy like OG, I'm like, yeah, Isaac has the higher offensive ceiling for sure.
Yeah, I get that.
Defensively, you know, you might say they're on the same level. But offensively, I think the things Isaac is able to do, I think his shooting stroke is a bit more consistent as well. So I give the edge to Isaac. I mean, for me right now, if I was given the choice, I'm pretty confident I would take Isaac.
Yeah, and look, I get that, man. I totally get that, and I probably would too. Like, I had Isaac ahead of OG in this case too, but you know, it's just, again, just for reference. Like, it's real close. So, yeah, overall, the Raptors did pretty good in that draft. I like to remind people that guys like CJ Leaf and Terrence Ferguson, you know, there's been a couple of misses. I'm saying that much. I mean, even a guy like
Josh Jackson right at the top.
Yeah, Josh Jackson went fourth overall, man. Like, that, again, it's Phoenix, and they don't make great decisions. Even, like, the New York Knicks picking Frank Ntilikina that early, like, who knows? But, yeah. The only other guy I'd mentioned maybe ahead of OG is, what's his name? I really like what Zach Collins was starting to do, but that's also another guy who's based on potential. Because if you look at the actual numbers, he's, like, 6.6 points per game last year, and they got hurt for most of this year, so it's hard to say he's better than OG, but I like his potential. But yeah, OG's, yeah, you know, top 10 pick again for the Raptors, which, again, is incredible value. And then the last guy, we're skipping a couple of guys because, you know, they're just frankly not as interesting to talk about. But the last guy I want to talk about, Terrence Davis. He goes undrafted in the 2019 NBA draft. In looking back at the redraft, this one's tough because the other ones, you have a huge sample, so you can really go back and evaluate what it is. We're talking about, like, a truncated, you know, three quarters of a rookie season, so it's a little hard. But for me, at the moment, I got Terrence Davis number 9 in this redraft. Guys like Zion, Ja Morant, RJ Barrett. RJ Barrett's even debatable, but I think Barrett's ahead of him. You know, DeAndre Hunter, you know, Darius Garland. Like, there's some decent players in this draft, but you know, I think honestly, based on what Terrence has done this year, which is 7.7 points per game for the Raptors, shooting really well from three, efficient, and really, if you look at things like win shares, for example, Terrence Davis is third in this draft class in win shares. So it's interesting, but I got him 9 in this draft. Where do you have Terrence Davis in the 2019 redraft?
Yeah, I have him a little bit lower. So like you, obviously, you know, Zion, Morant, Barrett. I have Hachimura moving up in the draft. I have okay. Tyler Herro moving up. I still think Cam Reddish is going to be a really good player. I know it's been
okay.
a slow start for him, but I think he has a really high ceiling. And then I think it gets interesting between, like, Terrence and, you know, do you want a defensive guy like Matisse Thybulle? Because I think he's had an incredible season defensively. Yeah. And has shown that he can be a legit part of a playoff rotation. And then I think PJ Washington has had a really nice season with Charlotte.
I like him.
So, and then you mentioned Darius Garland as well. So I think that's where I just moved him down a little bit more, just because, again, you know, situation matters so much, especially when we're looking at such a small sample size. Mm. And so, you know, how much more would any of these other guys thrive if they were playing for the Raptors instead? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
So I think from that standpoint, I still kept Terrence down a little. And let's face it, he still has a ways to go defensively as well, right? Like, mm-hmm. The most encouraging thing that we've seen with him that we didn't know coming in was how good his three-point stroke is. And, I mean, that is such a clean, pure stroke that he has. I mean, up and down every time. I think that's the thing, you know, beyond his compete level, his ability to drive, his athleticism, that's the thing that's going to really make him some money.
Yeah, for sure. And you throw in the athleticism and the ability to finish in traffic and things like that. I think especially as he gets older and sort of more mature, he's really going to be able to put those physical tools together. And the fact that he has a three-point shot to go along with it, like, we're talking about a guy who's 6'5 and can shoot threes and can finish above the rim. And he can handle the ball. Like, those are a lot of great skills. So this is the thing with this draft. Like, it's obviously so recent that so much of it is based on upside and potential and things like that. And the one thing working against Terrence is that he's older than some of these other guys. He's already 22. Like, so for example, Terrence Davis is older than OG Anunoby, just by like, you know, I mean, birthday, I guess. Yeah, so it's interesting because we're comparing him to guys like Zion and Ja, who are like 18 and 19 and stuff like that. But, yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. Terrence is also, but if you just look at the skill set, like, would you rather have a guy like Terrence or you know, Coby White, for example. Because Coby White had some really hot stretches. You know, he could do some things as a gunner. But, you know, if you look at the physical profile and the skill set, like, I might rather have Terrence Davis. Like, Terrence Davis, I know he has the ability physically to play defense eventually. Whereas with Derek White, or with Coby White, he's so frail and things like that, that it's debatable. Or even a guy like Tyler Hero, who, you know, again, did some really nice things for the Heat this year. But I think in the long run, Terrence Davis has more upside than a guy like, you know, Tyler Hero. So, you know, it's tough. Also, Eric Paschal. But that was a great pick for the Warriors.
Yeah, Eric Paschal. That's another name. You know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I mean, he's a guy that he really had a good summer league and then preseason and then just fell off, right? So with the regular season, I don't know what happened there. If he got the yips a little bit, who knows? So I think it's so early in their careers that you can pretty much debate anyone and revert back to their potential coming into the draft.
Yep.
And so I think that's where Terrence Davis, there's arguably, you know, he has the most ambiguity of anyone that we've discussed so far. So yeah, he could go in the top 10. He could go, you know, I think we can both agree that he's clearly a first round pick.
Yep.
He is clearly, you know, most likely a top 20 pick. And I think, again, for a guy who went undrafted, it speaks volumes of the way the Raptors are able to identify talent. And, you know, I'm just looking back on all the guys that we've discussed. We've had four of the Raptors go between the two of us in the top five, between Kyle, Mark, Serge, and Paschal.
Yep.
And then we've had another four guys go in the top 12.
Right.
Between Norm, Fred, OG, and Terrence.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the highest pick between all of these was probably Serge, 24th.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so, or Kyle, 24th, I guess, as well. So, yeah, I mean, right. Look, it's been an impressive, or I guess OG was 23.
Okay, OG,
so.
23, yeah.
But or I guess, well, Stanley's technically 8th. I mean, we really shouldn't count Stanley, but... but yeah, it's just, look, it's a reflection of two things. One, it's a reflection on the Raptors for the fact that they've been able to identify talent where other people may not have seen it, especially with a guy like Fred VanVleet, who's gone undrafted in 2016, but in our redraft goes top 10. And it's two, like, a credit to the fact that they picked guys who were determined to improve, and they didn't let sort of their draft slot sort of determine where they were going to be in terms of their careers. So that does for the podcast. I think it's... you know, it's just really fun to do these redrafts, I think. Historically, it's been very fun to sort of go back and revisit things. You and I revisited Game 7 of the 2001 conference semifinals between the Raptors and the Sixers, the original Game 7, where the shot for the Raptors missed. So you can go back and listen to that. But, yeah, so, you know, that does it for the podcast. Vivek, thanks for coming on. What do you want to plug? See, you got a big Bianca interview. What's going on here?
Yeah. I talked to Bianca Andreescu yesterday. She's trying to be a voice in this whole coronavirus pandemic and, you know, encourage people to stay safe, stay inside, and then just sort of offering up her own advice on how she's trying to stay busy and keep herself occupied and being really productive. I mean, you know, just even outside of an interview standpoint, you know, she's like, you know, almost half my age, and she's telling me about, like, self-development programs that she signed up for and, like, setting a schedule for her daily programs. And this is outside of being an athlete, right? Outside of, like, her workout schedule and doing whatever she can to be the best tennis player she can be. So I think, you know, she's got a head on her shoulders that's unreal for someone who's going to be 20 next month. So, yeah, a lot of cool stuff from her and her life and just what she's been up to of late. And so, yeah, it was a cool conversation, just trying to keep busy, man, like everybody else.
Yeah, there you go. So where can we find that piece?
You can find it at Complex. That's where most of my content is right now. And you can follow me on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob, where you'll find the link to the story. Yeah, besides that, you'll just find me on podcasts all over the place.
Yeah, there you go. So big thanks to Big V. Again, as I'm going to stand by this take, all right? The number one pick of the ROE, you know, guests. There's definitely a lot of great ones, you know. Big shout out to everyone who helps. But, I mean, come on, man. V's number one guy. So that does it for the podcast. Again, next week, there will be another long-form episode. There will be more classic reaction podcasts. And so continue to listen to the podcast. And hopefully they bring you a bit of sanity in this time where everything is shut down, despite the fact that it looks gorgeous outside. So please stay home. Please stay physically distanced. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.